And welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, the host. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus. I'll apologize up front for my voice. Got the old winter hammer coming here, I guess. So I'm sure everybody's got their home remedy to fix it or whatever. But sometimes we just got to get it done. We got to get that immune system working. So I'm battling with it a little bit. I don't take cold medicine. Makes me feel kind of funny. So you get to listen to one messed up voice. Anyway, True Wealth is sponsored by Coins Plus, Spokane, 444-0044, toll free 877-TAP-COIN through the website, coinsplus.com. And we're full service rare coin, precious metals, broker dealer, depository service, buying and selling coins and precious metals for many moons, over 21 years now. I wonder how many days that is. That's a lot of days. What would that be? 365, 73, probably close to 7,700 days of buying and selling. I guess I threw in the weekends there. And, you know, and I work long hours. So if you have 6,700 days times 24 hours, that's a lot. Well, I guess I don't work 24 hours. But if I work 10 hours a day, that'd be 67,000 hours, which is probably a good reason to explain why sometimes, let's just say hypothetically, I really do have 60,000 hours in experience. And trust me, we do so much more than buy gold and silver. That's just such a misnomer of our business. If that's all I do, if that's all we did is buy and sell gold and silver, what a boring life. But, you know, if you figure 60,000 hours of buying and selling, and trust me, I didn't plan to go into this math, say 60,000 hours, and then you add in, you know, the collegiate education in money and finance and economic mathematics and, you know, probability calculations and corporate stuff. And then you get into the banking background and Series 6 and 7 licensing. And I've been insurance licensed in every line in four states and taught people how to sell stocks and bonds and everything else. We have a little bit of experience here. And that's why when people go on the internet for 20 minutes and they really think they got a handle on it and they come in and they're going to tell us how what they think they should do, we have such a more in-depth experience. And, you know, one thing, folks, you got to forget about, one thing that absolutely is financial suicide is micromanaging your investments, watching them too close, worrying about them too much. Let me explain. When you get someone who gets a windfall profit, whether, you know, it's an inheritance or some big settlement or whatever, they micromanage the money, okay? They'll go buy an investment. What did it do today? Is it up? Is it down? Is it up? Is it down? You know, this kind of stuff. You will never do anything intelligent with that kind of mindset. What you want to do is accumulate wealth and preserve capital. And that means you save and build and save and build. You do not sit around and obsess over silver's up 7 cents today, silver's down 7 cents, silver's down. I get people like, you know, silver's gone down 27 cents since I bought from you. The one I like is when people go, yeah, this is John Smith. Hi, John. Yeah, you probably remember me. A few years ago, I sold you 1,000 ounces of silver. I'm not sure, John. Well, yeah, I'm sure you remember me because you made a lot of money on that. Well, how did I do that? Well, I noticed a month and a half after I sold it to you, silver went up like 20%. So you made 20%. First of all, folks, we buy and sell on a regular daily basis. We don't discriminate. You, the clientele, tell me when to buy and when to sell. Number two, that is absolute inexperience to even perceive that I could somehow buy your silver or your gold, and whether it be 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 2 months, 4 months, or a year later, happen to sell it on the peak of the peak. I mean, that would make me not only a speculator and not a businessman, it would make me the best speculator on planet Earth. We don't do that. We buy and we sell and we buy and we sell. People say, do you think gold's going up or down? Yes. But the thing is it will over time, the trend is up. Okay. I like it when it goes up. Everybody does well when it goes up. But it has gone up. It's just the mentality. Folks, you have to realize there is just a barrage of abuse and information, propaganda, being slung against metals and coins in the arena all the time. You've got to understand that you are sitting on a biblical asset. You are doing what God says in the Bible to do with your money. Now, look at the brevity of man's system. Man's system's built on greed and just monetary deception, power, corruption, false pretenses, debt. Folks, it's bad, right? I mean, it truly is. Our Federal Reserve System is a farce joke. I guarantee you, it infuriates God. Our economic system made by John Maynard Keynes was designed. The reason it was created was to be the, quote, missing ingredient for Marxism to prevail. Marxism, communism is all about money. People think it's just the opposite. No, it's always about the money. It was a utopian theory, a fantasy, that we're all going to share our money. Everybody's going to be equal. We're all going to work so hard to make us all equally poor. Folks, look at what is going on in North Korea. Did you see the soldier that escaped North Korea? He's the first soldier to get away in 10 years. And on his way out, he took bullets in the back from his own people. Okay, now think about it. If an American soldier, an idiot like Bo Bergdahl, who ran off and ultimately cost his fellow soldiers, his fellow military personnel, a lot of damage and in some cases their lives, while they searched for him. And you think about the contrary. In North Korea, when you defect, not that defecting's good, but your own fellow military people put bullets in your back. So what's worse is once this soldier gets over to South Korea, he gets in the hospital. They discover this, okay? They discover he's got a parasitic worm living within him, the length of a human arm. Yeah, that's pretty gross. They discover that he's got blood poisoning. They discover that he's got hepatitis B. I can't even remember what else he had. This was a military person. This is why they're all sick and wasted away. This is what happens in tyrannical governments. Folks, it is bad. And when people think they want communism, yeah, right. Keep dreaming. It's trash. It's a lie. It doesn't work. And just the foolish stupidity anymore. The 24/7 news cycles, and you get the left just always nonstop screaming and hollering and barking and anti-Trump. Did you see this where Trump got these three kids out of jail in China? So he gets these three UCLA basketball players out of jail for pretty severe shoplifting in China, not just picking up a pack of bubble gum. So he gets them out, brings them home, and the three boys thank him. Thank you, Mr. Trump. Thank you to the government. Thank you so much for getting them out of jail. Chris Cuomo of CNN, who's a total narcissistic fruitcake, is interviewing him, and surprisingly, he says, "Do you want to thank the president for getting your son out?" He says, "No." He's a black man. And he goes, "I would thank him if he really did something. Chris Cuomo said he did. He got your son out of jail in China." The guy says, "Well, that was for shoplifting. I've seen way worse." He goes, "No, I'm not going to thank Trump." He says, "I'd thank him if he actually did something." And the guy's like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Well, if he'd have taken my son and flew him home on his private jet, then I would thank him. But just for doing his job, no, I'm not going to thank him." It's like, oh my gosh, folks. And then on the Morning Joe show on MSNB Communism, they say, "Oh, this is obvious." Well, then Trump fires back. Sorry about that. Trump fires back and says, "Maybe I should have left your kid in jail." Meaning, come on, give me a break. But of course, the media goes, "Oh my gosh, he's a racist. He thinks blacks belong in jail." Folks, we've lost our marbles. Kids are being raised with absolute idiocy abounding all around them. So after the media gets the frenzy going about Trump being a racist, Morning Joe on MSNB Communism says, "Well, you can just see the racial undertones here. You know, Donald Trump's trying to force the black man to appreciate what the white man does." I mean, folks, I can't even believe I'm telling you this. It's like ridiculous gossip. It's just vile, but it is the epitome of where we're at now. And I keep saying this, and I listen to myself, and I'm like, you know, I really ask myself, am I too negative? What am I doing? You know, is this really what I want to do? I mean, you got all this information. We are in dire straits. Everybody's like, well, these are definitely the end times. You go through Timothy and you read the list of all the wretched stuff when Timothy says these are perilous times. The biggest problem, man, I got a lot racing through my mind. Maybe it's the cold. Oh, man, I got a lot of ideas. So anyway, there's the three basic functions as a believer. And that is, you are to think, speak, and act your actions. The biggest problem with people focusing too much on the end times the wrong way, don't get me wrong, there's no doubt these are the end times. But they get into this, God's in control, God takes care of everything, and we don't need to do anything but pray. Absolute lies. We are called to act. And I always, as an example, look at the founding fathers. There was a brood of godly men that stood up, fought, bled, died, had great ideas. They thought, they spoke it. They said, let's go, let's do. They told the British government, this is what we're doing. But then they had to act. If they'd have just had great ideas, what would that have got them? Lord, we want a new country to start where we can be free from the king. God, we just pray, pray, pray. Okay? People say, well, you know, God could have prompted them to do something. Okay, so then they would have spoke, we need a new country, we need a new country, right? But not until they act. Does anything come to fruition? God gives us the ability to conceive thoughts. He gives us the ability to speak, but he mostly gives us the ability to act. My only point is this. I dislike heavily the attitude of God's in control, so I don't have to do anything. Wrong, wrong, wrong. What are we judged for when we die? Our acts, our actions. And, you know, people have this idea, once saved, always saved. I don't know for sure. I do know that in my case, once I received Christ, I could not reject him. He's the real deal. He dwells within me. He's cleansed my life. But I have seen people that appear to have received Christ who have vehemently rejected him. And I am not talking about behavior. I'm talking about in their hearts. Christians in general can become very judgmental. I get stuff in the mail and by email. And folks, I'll tell you stuff. There, if people, you know, there is a message for sure. But if you follow Jesus Christ, he spoke wrath, but he spoke love, and he spoke truth, and he had compassion. And who he had compassion on were the sincere seekers, okay? So I get stuff in the email and by mail or whatever that is truth, but harsh. You know that hellfire and brimstone and calling girls who wear pants whores. And, you know, granted, you know, this thing with pants, I mean, this is not my area, but Deuteronomy, I think it's 25, says, women are not to wear men's clothes, and men are not to wear women's clothes. So then they say, you know, if women wear pants, they're wearing men's clothes, it's a sin. First of all, that is an Old Testament law that takes a lot of noodling to bring to now. Those laws given to the Jews was for them to be set apart. Also back then, men's clothing at the time of Egypt and in the early Hebrew clothing had an open front. I mean, it opened up in the front. Women's did not. Folks, it didn't work like you're thinking. I mean, if women had the stuff that opens in the front, guess what? It wouldn't work, especially up top. That's where the men's were always open. They had a totally different set of clothing. Now, pants were created for ranching and convenience. I mean, if you grew up like I did in central Montana, out in the middle of ranches, and I'm talking ranches, cattle ranches, in the middle of winter calving, you can't wear a skirt. You'll trip and you'll die and you'll fall. So the American pant came from a culture of need. Now, women would wear skirts quite a bit and all that. And granted, we've changed. And there's no doubt in my mind, which is kind of what I'd like to, you know, take the show to today. I'm not sure how to hit on this and tie it all together. But there's truth to this stuff. I mean, the woman-man struggle in society is what we're seeing. Well, women will say, God, sin, men, women. Those are the four items that are messed up right now that are giving us a daily sexual harassment announcements. We've got Henry or Harry Weinstein, okay? Mr. Hollywood producer. I mean, sick, excuse me, but fat, ugly, ugly pervert who would get women into his hotel room and go put on a bathrobe and show up fat and naked and expect these women to be impressed or drag them into the bathroom while he took a shower and did stuff. And folks, ugh, right? What's wrong with these sick pigs? Okay, then we get Charlie Rose, you know, the main anchor for the NPR, National Public Radio, the, you know, government-sponsored news source of America, but really super biased, left-wing, deceptive, yuck. So what happens? He's doing the same thing, right? Can't quit. Lefty, right? They're all lefties. And then you get this other, I can't remember the black guy. Oh, I can't remember. Sorry, congressman that's under fire for sexually harassing women. Let me see if I can find him. Let's see. I should know this. Starts with a C. Oh, nice. They can't put it in the name. Oh, well. So today's not my day for that, and nor does it matter. But anyway, 87-year-old, which, by the way, is another annoying thing with Google. You try to do a basic, you know, common sense search, and you get garbage that is out of control. They have taken it over, so you cannot get organic searches at all. What is this guy's name? Now it's bugging me. It's like Covington or something, or Conyers, okay? 87-year-old guy sexually harassing 22-year-olds. Yuck. I mean, what makes men think this way? But the other problem that we've got is we've got this idea now that all men are evil perverts, okay? Today on the news, I hear this garbage that the Girl Scouts puts out. They say, don't make your young girls give hugs to relatives over the holidays during greetings and stuff. I'm like, what? Can you imagine I go to my my 13-year-old niece, hi, Braden. Hey, happy Thanksgiving. And I go to give her a hug and she moves away. I actually have had that happen. You may have had it happen yourself. It's bizarre. There's one particular situation where a very close family friend was around and a part of the family, and I go to hug her, and she gives me this super sideways, you know, bizarre kind of slip-out thing, and I'm like, whoa, that wasn't good. She must not like me. And then I watch her hug two other guys in the family. No, same thing. Maybe she's got baggage, hard feelings. You know, maybe she's had some trouble. I understand all that. But hugging is not does not have to be a sexual thing. It's a normal form of greeting in a lot of countries. So how do I try to put all this together? So here's what's going through my mind in rapid fashion. We have sexual harassment running rampant, okay? We've got, folks, believe it or not, the sexual harassment is directly linked to abortion. It's directly linked to all the women's rights garbage, okay? And here's how it works in my mind. What in the world has gone wrong in America? Why are we such a farce? This is all the product of the 60s. What I mean is this. We strip away all morality. God built a system of hierarchy, okay? It goes God, government, man, woman, children. That is the system of hierarchy. The pleasure of it all is that we have direct access to God as well. But when it comes to spiritual authority, ultimately the government has authority over us. So, if it goes God, government, man, woman, child, what have we done? Look at what we've done. Let's go backwards. Let's flip it around. We've got children that are now able to sue their parents to emancipate their relationships. We've educated our children to disrespect their kids. They watch filthy garbage sitcoms on TV. They shouldn't even be watching TV because there's nothing good on. I mean, I'll admit I watch a little bit of news, Fox News, and movies. And I love movies. I love good movies. I've been watching movies for so long, I really believe I could be a good movie critic because I've seen so many and I can see the phony from the real and everything in between. But I like movies, even though you'll get some stuff once in a while you shouldn't, I can still filter the rest of it, okay? And like the other night, Monday night, I watched this movie called Mully, which is a true story about a black guy in Africa. Unbelievable. I'll see if I can get back to that without getting too sidetracked because I'm trying to tie all this together. Well, I got to tell you about this movie. This is, if you're listening to the show and you expect me to stay on track, my apologies. Mully. I'm going to try to short story this guy's life. Amazing. Raised in Kenya. At the age of 6, wakes up one day. His mother and father are gone. His father, when he was growing up, was an absolute wretched alcoholic. Would come home, literally beat his mother, mop the floor with her hair, and beat the kids. Total trash bag. leaves him alone. He wakes up all alone, no parents anywhere, nowhere to be found. Leaves his hut, goes to his uncle's hut, looks for help. His uncle brushes him away. Get out of here. He goes on the street begging. Folks, 6 years old, you hear me? Orphaned at six, begging. Parents abandon him. Not died, not AIDS, abandon him. Okay? Grows up on the street. He's a street kid. One day, he gets called into a church service. They give him a sermon. He hears two things. He said, if you work hard and pray, God will save you, help you, whatever it was. That's it. That's what he came out of there with. So he starts praying. He said when he was on the street and he would beg, he was a beggar, people would say, get a job, you know. And he said, boy, I wish I could have. So somehow this church service spurs him to go to Nairobi by foot, which I think he said took 3.5 weeks of walking. That is a pretty long walk. And again, begging the whole way, starving, stealing when he had to, and you name it. Gets to Nairobi, starving to death, begging on the streets. Things aren't working well. He sees a house, and he goes to the, which, you know, he sees someone go in a house, whatever. Goes to the door, bangs on the door, which he said wasn't uncommon for him, begging for food. The lady that answers says, no, get away. And he's like, just please, please, I need food. So she brushes him, brooms him away a number of times, finally says, okay, fine, come and have a little bit of food, gives him some food. They talk. She says, well, I can give you a little bit of work for a little bit of food. So he starts doing dishes and stuff. Apparently an extraordinarily wealthy family. Starts doing dishes, cleaning up, whatever. Earns over the next couple years respect. Begins to get responsibility, management. At this point, he's a teenager, like 14 years old. And he's now managing. And as another year or two goes by, they're so impressed with this kid. He ends up being the manager. Over 800 people in this wealthy family's, you know, whatever you call it, compound, organization, slave operation. But they weren't bad people, he said. So he's at 14 or 15, he's managing 800 people. Still not making much money at all. He says he's working evenings. He goes and he starts making payments on a taxi cab. And he starts driving cab at night, making extra money. He stops sleeping, really. Doesn't sleep much. Because he wants to make more money. He's motivated and driven. As time goes on, he accumulates money. He gets more money. He buys more cabs. And he begins to build a cab service called Molly's Cab Service. But he's got big trucks and transport things. Because over there, everybody's carrying their whole life with them and whatnot. So Molly starts out abandoned at six. He's an orphan, begging. Now all of a sudden, he was the manager of an operation running a taxi cab service. He grows that, grows that, grows that. He starts to get into buses. He starts to get into all kinds of different transportation methods. He's doing very well. He's got to buy gas every day, and there's a problem with gas. So he gets involved transporting gas to and from these gas stations to make sure people have gas. From there, he gets into the gas business, gas and oil. He gets very big. He eventually becomes a multi-millionaire in Nairobi. Unheard of, right? By the age of 22, I think, or 21, he was worth an unbelievable amount of money. Started as a six-year-old orphan, abandoned by his parents, begging on the streets. Now he's worth a ton of money. So he finds a wife, gets married over time, has a bunch of kids, literally like nine of them, beautiful family life, loving life. And God starts to tug on his heartstrings. He sees these orphans all over Africa and he can't escape their faces at night. He tries to sleep. He can't sleep. He sees these orphans. So then God is contending with him, and he just will not listen to God and stop. And he said, one day I just started driving and driving and driving while God literally just railed on him. And I got to keep this short. So what happens is he finally, after a series of prayers and arguments over months or days or whatever it was, he finally yields to God, says, fine, God, I'll do what you want. Well, what God told him to do is to sell everything he owned, never work for another penny again, and dedicate his lives to these children, orphans. So he immediately tells his family, they're sick about it. They're living a great life. All of a sudden, he starts going around, gathering up orphans everywhere, filling up his house with so many orphans. His kids are getting pressed out of their rooms. They're losing all their food, their clothes. It's bad. It's very invasive. He begins adding more and more outbuildings and more orphans. He ends up sending his kids to boarding school because he's putting so much time, energy, and effort and resources into what now is 100 or 200 orphans that his kids, he can't even properly raise his kids. Sends them to boarding school. And puts all of his attention in orphans. His kids are livid. They're unhappy. They hate their dad. Mully continues to put his heart into these kids, and it grows and grows, and he builds more outbuildings, and it grows. He starts to call it Mully Children's Family because he wanted to provide a family. So anyway, it gets too big. He gets a vision. God says, acquire this desert land, the worst desert land you can imagine, folks. And God says, I will make it fertile. This land will be incredibly fertile. He acquires this massive amount of desert. And everyone's like, you're crazy. This will never be fertile. It is the desert. I've seen pictures of it. It's terrible. So he gets there. God gave him this promise. He starts building these massive buildings out of corrugated steel. No heat, no water, no air conditioning, obviously. But do you hear me? No water, no water, no water. Every day he's got to drive 4 miles in, 4 hours into town, 4 miles back, 4 hours back to get a huge quantities of water. So he can't be there, and he's trying to feed these kids, and it's so rough and hot and uncomfortable. These kids are like, I was better off on the streets, and they start running away again. And so now he's up to like 1,000 kids. It just keeps growing and growing. God's given him this vision. You will have fertile here. It will be fertile here. Finally, his wife comes to him one day and tells him. I mean, and in the meantime, he's got all these visions. There's a ravine down in the desert that he built, that he bought. God says, build a bridge here. He literally has all these kids working to build this great big bridge. And I'm talking concrete piers. I'm talking big bridge, you know. And everybody's like, you're crazy. He said, one day their water will run under this bridge. They're like, you're crazy. So his wife comes to him and says, we're out of money. He spent his millions and millions. Years have gone by. He says, why are you talking to me? Pray to God. So she prays. The next day, a lady shows up with truckloads of food, tons of cash, tons of water, everything. Gives him enough cash to go on longer. But he begins running out again, and he wakes up one night, walks out, and the God says, walk, and he walks into the desert, and he says, stop, and he tells Mully, there's water here, and I'm talking, folks, desert. I'm talking hard, dry clay at best. I'm talking desert, no water, complete drought, dead, dry, horrible area by some national park down there. So he goes back, wakes up in the morning, tells the kids, go out here. He marked a stake, and he says, dig. God says there's water here. Again, everyone thinks they're crazy. His kids were so sick of him by the time he bought this desert, gave up their beautiful property, bought this terrible desert land, thousands of acres, put these corrugated buildings on it. Now he's telling them to dig for water in the middle of the worst desert conditions you can imagine. So the kids go dig. And this is a documentary, so they got footage of it. They stop. They go, there's no water. Day goes by, no water. He says, keep digging. God said it's there. They keep digging. No water, Mully. I don't care. God said it's there. Finally, they hit bedrock, literally hard bedrock. They go all around it. It's bedrock. Everywhere you turn, they're done. They hit bedrock. Molly said, keep digging. They said, we can. It's bedrock. He said, you chip away and you chip through it. God said there's water here. So they begin to excavate with hand tools through this bedrock. Eventually, one kid's hitting with a pickaxe. He gets through. Boom. Water comes exploding out of there like someone had just hit an oil well. In the middle of the desert outside of Nairobi, impossible odds now. This is impossible. There had to be an underground water channel that was one in a million. I mean, a million. How about one in a billion? Now he's got water. So in tons of it, nice clean water. So they got drinking water. Now he's starting to pipe the water. He starts to grow vegetation to feed the kids. He's got thousands and thousands of kids, orphans. They go around every day and pick these orphans up. And which is a blessing because these poor kids, right? So he's got water and he begins to grow vegetation. And in long story short, in time, the vegetation gets to be so plentiful that he's got extra to sell to support the children's home. Things are getting so good that he builds these huge hydroponic greenhouses. And folks, I'm talking huge. I'm talking big. I'm talking one after the next, after the next, after the next, literally for as far as the eye can see. And these have such a condensation issue in them that he's collecting the water and so they've got all the food you could imagine. They're beginning to sell so much, they're getting excessive surplus, so more and more kids are coming. They're running the excess condensation off, and now they're building holding reservoirs of water, big reservoirs. They dig one after the next, they connect them, they literally end up with lakes, little pond lakes, they fill them with fish. Now they've got a fish farm. They're growing their own fish, and they're selling their own fish. And interestingly enough, as all this water is replenishing and nourishing the land and creating this massive blessing for this Mully who gave up everything and trusted God, there's thousands of acres now developed with vegetation and water and lakes. And because of the evaporation of the water of this area, he has now created his own microclimate. And so what begins to happen is I don't know if you know much about hydroponics, the study of water, but water attracts water. So, and what I mean by that is, well, I won't get into it, but literally where men in Montana will build these huge reservoirs, massive reservoirs in the middle of Montana where there's no water. Well, what happens under them? Springs will actually move to the reservoirs. It's a miracle that God created. Water attracts water. So because of this, he begins to get a microclimate. He's starting to get cumulus clouds and rain. Well, guess what that does? That draws water out of the air around him, and it brings more in. Now they have their own separate little microclimate. They literally are living in a tropical, fertile area, as God promised him, and that land turns green. And they start to get a lot of rain. And they get so much rain that ravine that he built a bridge in that had never seen water before now has water running under the bridge. And God told him to build that bridge because one day water would run there. And he lived on faith. And I mean, there's more to the story, but what a cool story, right? That's what happens when you throw the gloves off and you put your faith in God. But how many of us can do that? And it's interesting that first God let him go out and acquire incredible financial success. and then call them away. But please understand, other people can make that kind of money, and God will say, you make more money. I will bless you, but you bless me, you bless my people, you bless my church. I talk to people all the time, and I get people that will say, I don't want gold and silver, you know. I don't want to store my treasures on earth. I want to store treasures in heaven. And the thing is that's only one verse. It's really important that we are financially responsible, that we have financial stewardship in everything we do. I've read over and over where God says he'll give you riches. That comes with wisdom. I'm not saying name it and claim it. I'm not saying God owes it to you. But I am saying that you are a child of the living God, okay? And I'll tell you, I felt a little moved here recently on a lot of these things. It's interesting how he brings me things in clumps. And faith-based, you know, basically when it comes to our faith, okay, it's a supply and demand thing. If you get caught up in, you know, God is this big, harsh, nasty God that just is disgusted and wants you to live garbage, you know, that doesn't fit a father, a loving father. If you're a loving father, you are also a wrathful father, if you want to use that term. Maybe it's a little harsh, but God is. But you are a disciplinarian when you need to be. You're the kid's best friend when you don't. So keep that in mind. So faith, you know, we'll call it a supply and demand faith-based system. There is a supply and demand issue for God's favor and blessing on our lives. What I mean is, okay, people who criticize prayer for prosperity have never been a farmer or a rancher or self-employed. I'm telling you, I had a guy call me the other day giving me this, don't store up your treasures in on earth and all. I'm like, you know what? You've never been a farmer or a rancher or self-employed. You have to pray for prosperity. It's God's business. You are his steward. I've dealt with friends that feel so uncomfortable praying for God to bless them financially when they own their own business. They sit there and struggle. There's one guy in particular in our business who he and I went into business the same time. He took over a shop from a little old guy. He's still in a little shop. But he was afraid. He'll always tell you how down and out he is, how broke he is. And he gets people to do business with him because they feel sorry for him and they feel like they're doing him a favor. Who wants to go through life like that? Do you really think God wants us like that? And I want you to always think father and child. If you had a child, would you want your child, if they were in business, to have the people do business with them because they felt so sorry for your child because your child was so pathetic? Or would you want people to do business with your child's business because it was prosperous and it was based on winning and it was based on success and a positive mental attitude and uplifting and edification and good stewardship? Always think of God's relationship with us as a parent. Now, I understand some of you have some terrible trauma in your past. Terrible. Number one, deal with it. A lot of people say, oh, it's behind me now. I just moved on. No, you didn't. I just dealt with this with a close friend for too long in a business relationship, and it's sad. It had created terrible things that happened to him growing up. It had created extreme dishonesty. I mean, he lied all the time. He was so afraid of his own shadow, he couldn't do anything. And he believed that he dealt with it and moved on. In fact, what happens is if you experience childhood trauma, especially sexual abuse, your left lobe, which is your conservative logical mind, is also where your memories are. Your right brain's your artistic side. So the left brain has all this stuff in it, and you can't go over there and think because you got to tiptoe around all these terrible memories, okay? if you finally deal with it and cope with it, then you have freedom of thought, free to reign. Now, the person who does that to a child, they'll pay a price. I've run into pedophilia stuff. I had another guy, you know, that I thought was a good, godly Christian man, refer me an employee who was terrible. And the guy was a convicted pedophile, multiple times in and out of jail. And when I went back to this guy, the Christian guy who had referred him locally here, he's like, well, he's repented and he's turned around. I'm like, this guy, you know, I don't know what he's done, but he's been in and out of jail for pedophilia. He told me it's been something he's dealt with his whole life, and I won't get into the details. But you know what? I'm like, no thanks. I don't want that guy working for me. It's they've shown over and over it's impossible to cure. So those people will have their day in God's court. In the meantime, we've got to be accountable for our own actions. The worst thing we can do is blame our downfalls, pitfalls, and failures today on things that happened back then. But a lot of times the people that are the victims will say, I don't want to be a victim. Well, you were a victim. A victim's a victim. There's real victimization, and then there's a victim's mentality. And if you're really victimized, you have to cope with it. It doesn't mean you need to run around and ask for sympathy, but you got to cope with it. So anyway, let's get rolling on this. People who criticize prayer for prosperity have never been a farmer or rancher or self-employed. I think I can assure you that. Or they've thrown in the towel and they don't care. They're not being good stewards. God is your, when you're self-employed, God's the boss. That's what matters. You go to God for a raise when you're self-employed. So don't criticize people who pray for prosperity. You're supposed to pray about everything in your life. You don't tiptoe around topics. If you've got an area of sin in your life that you just keep going back to, you pray through that. God is with you anyway. So if you're in the midst of that activity, you pray to God, stop me, help me, change my heart, you know, do a miracle, whatever it takes. Don't think that you've got the on or off switch with God. It doesn't work that way. God's God, always will be there, period. Wage-earning employees used to be for the... So, sorry about that. I'm struggling with this cold a little bit. So the wage-earning employees used to be, you know, basically, what I'm saying, how to explain this. The way it used to be is nearly everyone was ultimately self-employed in the olden days. They'd hang a shingle. And then Henry Ford came along, we had the Industrial Revolution, and a lot of people started to work for other people. But before that, like I was saying about praying for prosperity, rancher, farmer, business owner, before, it used to be that only wage-earning employees that worked for other people were either slaves or very young, just starting out or handicapped or whatever. Most people had a business. They had a trade. They'd hang their shingle, as they say. In fact, our corporate laws in America were designed to make it very easy to go into business, and a very wealthy senator from, I think, either Vermont or Virginia, you may have recognized the name. It's Rockefeller. He got special laws put in place to give special favors to large corporations, creating the corporate code, which now curses this nation. It gives them a different tax structure. It makes them push mom and pops out of business. But anyway, I'll just keep going. So everyone used to be ultimately self-employed. If God's got unlimited resources and we're only looking to fill a 1 gallon bucket, think about it. We are limiting the demand. God has an infinite supply of blessing. Do we say, God bless me, and hold out a 1 gallon bucket when God's sitting there with the whole universe in his hands? Or let's even say he's really, really gentle with you, and he only wants to pour your 1 gallon bucket full from a 55-gallon drum. We've got to open our minds and expand our thinking. Expect more from God. Know how big he is. I cannot believe the people I talk to that have built a box for themselves. You know, people that are unemployed, and God can't do this, and God can't do that, and I've only got this, and I've only got that. You know, I went through that back in the 90s when I left a banking position that was really bad. A lot of immorality going on. And there was a wake of firings behind me when I left because there was stuff that needed to be done. My boss would not deal with it because I was such a high performer that he wanted another star performer year, which apparently back then put $45,000 in his pocket. So he was overlooking internal theft of one of my employees, but I had no authority. And anyway, when I walked away and I had to pray and I got out to Spokane from Montana, and everybody said, you're never going to make that kind of wage again here. You're too young. You're not worth it. You're only worth so much. You know, it wasn't like I was making a killing, but in the 90s, you know, I was making a fair amount. So I get out to Spokane. All these employment agencies are like, watch this video. And all the video did is dishearten me and tell me I was never going to do well again. And I got discouraged, but I told my wife, I'm different. I'm the child of the living God. God can do anything, and I'm going to believe him for it. And he did. He provided incredible opportunity that other people didn't get to see because they didn't trust God to have it. So if our ability to receive God's favor and blessing is a 1-gallon bucket, that's all we can do. It really is true, folks, that we limit God's ability to work on us. Don't, you know, people might say, that's not true. God's going to do whatever he wants. No, God doesn't do whatever he wants. The Bible is very clear. Why do we pray? If it says, if you delight yourself in the Lord, he will give you the desires of your heart. You know, where two or more are gathered, I'm there with them. You know, pray and, I mean, I can go on and on, but God says, I hear you. Have faith. I'm tired of apologizing every time I say this. I'm not a name it and claim it guy, but I'm telling you, faith's a big part of our faith, right? So let's buzz. In Psalms 119, it says, even in a famine, the righteous will have more than enough. You hear that? God's promise to Malachi in Malachi 3, what's it say? It says, our barns will overflow. Our barns. Think about that. This just kind of came to me the other day. He doesn't say our bucket will overflow. He says our barns will overflow. Not our buckets, not our pockets, not even our bank accounts. He says our barns, and then he also mentions vats of wine. A vat of wine is a massive, you know, it's the equivalent of a, what would you be like, you know, a huge horse trough, but bigger. He didn't say your bottles of wine will overflow. Your vats of wine will overflow. And then he yells, trust me in this. Please try me out. God's that big. We may have once had the fire in us and something's decreased our capacity and belief in the ability of the God of the universe. But He needs our permission to bless us to overflowing. I don't care if you agree with that or not. Yes, he can do it, but he needs our permission. We've got to be able to accept and receive it. That's why people want so many things, but they don't prepare themselves for it. They don't think that way. Christ said you can't put new wine in old wineskins, right? You can't go to a new level with old thinking. Our natural mind tells us we do not deserve it. That is what is at the core of all the people I see complaining about the faith approach to God. So I say, ask for it all. God can fill it. God promises us a full, abundant, overflowing life. He says he does exceedingly, abundantly, over and above. Those are his words. What does that mean? Exceedingly, abundantly, over and above. I mean, I could go on and on, and I don't really have the time. So, as usual, we're out of time again. I definitely am frustrated because I had some pretty good ideas for today's show. Oh, folks, bottom line, keep it simple. Thanksgiving tomorrow. Give thanks, folks. Be grateful. Please, just do it. You think you got it tough? Go find someone who really does. Look at one of these veterans who's lost their limbs and their face has been burnt up. You know, there's literally a guy I've seen on the web, no hands and no arms, and he's a happy camper. Folks, there's a lot worse things you could be dealing with right now. I'm not saying, you know, we don't struggle. Financially, I wish I had more time to talk today. I'm frustrated. Great times. Great times. I had notes. Man, I'm telling you what, get in there. I'm going to keep it real simple. We, for Christmas presents, folks, we got Christmas silver rounds, okay? We've got 1 ounce silver coins that say peace on earth, or they have nativity scenes. They're really nice. They're 1 ounce of silver, and they cost, you know, roughly $22 a piece or something like that. Great Christmas gifts. Give somebody something that matters. You want to step it up? Silver dollars. We got all kinds from all ranges. They're the best gift. Everybody loves the old Morgan dollar. They're the best Christmas gift. Give somebody something that matters. And that goes for you, too. You want to invest, you want to save, come in and get silver dollars. We got a nice quantity, a lot of better stuff. Even, I don't care if it's $1,000, $10,000, whatever you got. Thanks for tuning in. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, folks. Please, bless God. Remember what the holiday is all about. It's about the Lord. From today through Christmas, it's about Jesus Christ. Praise God. Bye-bye. See you Friday. Bye-bye.